Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf in Avodah Zarah is Nun Gimel. We are starting today on Nun Beis Amud Beis, and we are towards the top of the Amud. Various questions are going to be asking that we asked yesterday in terms of whether or not you can be Mevatel Avodah Zarah, whether or not you can be Mevatel Takrovos Avodah Zarah, and what about its Tumma. And so we are continuing in the Gemara, picking up right where we left off yesterday on Nun Beis Amud Beis by Minei. So 5-6 lines on the top of the Amud by Minei Rav Yosef Ben Shalmi Rabbi Kelim Shishim Shabam Beis Chonyo. So what about the Kelim that we're using in Beis Chonyo? Beis Chonyo, temple that existed for a long time. It was out in Egypt. Strange incident, strange circumstances. Gemara discusses Beis Chonyo a number of times. It comes up in the course of the beginning of Bayis Sheni. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Mefarsh B'Shmaita B'Sraisa De Menachos. So one of the last sugyas in Masechta Menachos. Chonyo Beno Shel Shimon HaTzadik. So we're talking about now the son of Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik Mishayari Knesses HaGedola was one of the remnants of the Anshe Knesses HaGedola. And so he had two sons, and one of them was Chonyo. And the Rashi,
huh? He was the
Kohen Gadol. So Rashi over here bypasses a lot of the details of the story. When we get to Menachos, we'll go through more details. But anyway, Baruch Lemitzrayim, Ibnei Achiv. So because of unfortunately, a sibling rivalry, so he had to run to Mitzrayim. Ubanasha Mizbeach. And he built the Mizbeach in Mitzrayim, and it lasted there for many years. In fact, the Gemara talks about how there was offerings on Beis Chonyo, even after Churban Bayis Sheni. But anyway, and a debate over there in the Gemara Menachos, what was its religious significance? Was it a place of Avodah Zarah? Was it a place of genuine Avodah towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu? So, v'kami b'ayle l'Rav Yosef ben Shaul liba d'man d'amr labis Avodah Zkochavim hi. D'liba d'man d'amr d'Avodah Zkochavim hi lo kami b'ayle d'ahash l'hejot asurin k'd'amr l'el b'kelim ch'nisham shubahem l'Avodah Zkochavim akasim edab l'gavol mi b'ayle. Now, this line of questioning, says Rashi, is not going according to the opinion. That's the shame of Avodah Zarah, because it's a no-brainer. If Beis Chonyo was l'shem Avodah Zarah, you and I would not be able to use the kelim. So it goes without saying that you would not be able to transfer those kelim from Beis Chonyo to the Beis HaMikdash. But assuming that Beis Chonyo was a house of worship l'shem Shamayim, and there was kelim that was used in Beis Chonyo, can I now take those kelim and bring them to the Beis HaMikdash? Obviously, we're talking about when the Beis HaMikdash was extant. Good. So, by Minei Rav Yosef, Rabbi, so let's go back to the Gemara. Kelim Shishim Shem Beis Chonyo Mau, Shein Shem Shem Behem Beis HaMikdash, Bekami Ba'ilei, Ali B'daman Dar Beis Chonyo La Beis HaVaz Kochavim, He did none. And the Gemara says, like Rashi foreshadowed, that we're talking about, we're assuming that Beis Chonyo was L'Shem Shemayim. The Mishnah teaches us, Kohanim Shishim Shem Beis Chonyo Lo Yisham Shem B'Mikdash, Shibrishlam Bein Esarach Lama L'Davar Achim. Okay, let's say you had a Kohen who defected, and basically he worked in Beis Chonyo. So so they are not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and it goes without saying in Tzarech Lama L'Davar Acher, not for Davar Acher. Meaning, Rashi points out over here, Kohanim Shishim Shul Avodas Kochavim Main Tzarech Lama Shul Yisham Shul L'Mikdash. If you have a Kohen who served idolatry. So there it's obvious. That in other words, once you served idolatry, that's it. You are now banned and barred from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. You're blacklisted. And k'dechsi b'cheskel yanasher yishar su asom lefnei gulayim v'kse basrei lo yigoshu elai lechahin li. Pasuk in Yecheskel says very clearly that once you're a Kohen, you're serving Avodah Zarah, that's it. You're banned. U'medikamrein tzarech lamal davar achir mechlal de Beis Chonyo lav davar achiru. So, and that means to say that Beis Chonyo was okay, meaning it was not Davar Acher, it was not Avodah Zarah. So now we understand that the starting point of the question is working with not an assumption, but a fact. The fact is that a Kohen who serves in Beis Chonyo, even if we prescribe to the position that Beis Chonyo is L'Shem Shemayim, they can no longer serve in the Beis HaMikdash. It's still considered however you want to describe it, a rebel, huh?
Because it was
It's a rebellious act, meaning you should be centralized in the Beis HaMikdash. So anyway, so we start off with the fact, and the fact is that if you're serving in Beis Chonyo, you cannot, as a Kohen, you can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And so now, we start with the Kohen, and we know the Kohen is barred. So now we're going to say the same thing regarding Kalim, and we can either see them as being the same, or we can make a distinction. And the Gemara goes over both sides. Kohanimu dekansinu rabbanam mishum debnei deyaninu. Aval Kalim lo. So maybe on one hand we could say, look, the Kohanim made a choice. In other words, they're human, they have Bechir Chavshis, and they made a choice to go to Beis Konyo. And so for them, we can understand that the Chachamim are going to levy a knas against the Kohanim so that they can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash. But Odim Aloshnar, maybe no. Maybe once the Chachamim, maybe the knas of the Chachamim is, you had any dealings with Beis Konyo, either you're a person or you're a Kli, that's it. In other words, they wanted to distance themselves from Beis Konyo. Maybe the knas was against anything that was used in Beis Konyo, be it a person, be it a Kli. So he says, look, I think it's Aser. I think you cannot use a Kli that was in Beis Konyo and bring it to the Beis of Mikdash. I had a Pasuk, but I'll be honest with you, I forgot it. Eitzvei. The Gemara challenge is based on a Pasuk. Kol HaKelem Asher Hizniach HaMelech Achaz B'machusau B'malo Hichano V'iktishinu. So we know that Chizkiyahu had a father by the name of Achaz. We also know that he had a son by the name of Menashe. Both of them were Rishayim. Chizkiyahu was good, beyond good, meaning in the Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin. We talked about how special Chizkiyahu was. But anyway, a lot of the Avodah Zarah of his father, so the Pasuk over here that we're quoting from Divrei HaYamim describes that Kol HaKelem Asher Hizniach HaMelech Achaz B'machusau B'malo Hichanu V'iktishinu. It sounds like, what did Chizkiyahu do with those kelim? He prepared them. Now, my love, Hichanu de'at belinu, hiktishanu de'aktishinu. So what did he do? He told them in the mikvah, and he recycled them. He refreshed them somehow. He got rid of their status. So that is seemingly a good indication that there's a way of resetting a kli. Now, mind you, by the way, I mean, think of the leap we just made. I mean, to go from Achaz to Chizkiyahu, Achaz was using it L'Shem Avodah Zarah. Chizkiyahu was not using it L'Shem Avodah Zarah, he's using it L'Shem Shamayim. And somehow, I mean, the Gemara doesn't even explain the process. But, I mean, yes, the Gemara describes it, but the Gemara doesn't explain how this works. But somehow it's able to go from Avodah Zarah to being used for the Beis HaMikdash. And if that's true, which we're gonna question that in just a moment. But if that's true, then for sure you could use something from Beis Chonyo and use in the Beis HaMikdash. Amalei Baruch HaTal HaShamayim Shechazarti Li'Aved Asi. See, he says, oh, you know what? I had a pasuk. I forgot the pasuk. You just quoted that pasuk in Divrei HaYamim. That's my pasuk. Meaning that's the pasuk that teaches me that you can use it. Now, and in terms of what we learn from that pasuk, you said the pasuk wrong. Heichanu Sheganzun. Meaning, what does it mean, Heichanu? Heichanu literally means to prepare, but in this case it means that we took the kelim of, meaning Chizkiyahu took the kelim of Achaz, and Eichanu means he put in Geniza, meaning he got rid of it. And Hikdishanu, Shikdishanu Achem Tachteim, a new kelim. Because the kelim that were used by Achaz were used L'Shem Avodah Zarah, they can't be used, and so therefore we got a new kelim. And again, I know that it's not exactly the same to go from Achaz to Chizkiyahu, to go from Beis Chonyu to the Beis HaMikdash, but still it's at least it speaks to the idea that once a kli is used for something that is illegal or illicit, I know there are different levels of illegal, but once it's used for something that's illegitimate, you can no longer use it for legitimate purposes. That's the basic idea. Le'me Messiah, Le'me the Gemara now, suggests that this perhaps would be a proof, and we're discussing now the Beis HaMokad. The Beis HaMokad is a very big office to the side of the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMokad, it was so big that it had a roof overhead. It had four corners. Two of those corners were in the Azara. Two of those corners were outside the Azara. And now this is a Mishnah Midos, which is a description of the four corners of the Beis HaMokad. Mizrach Tzfonis, we're talking now about the northeast corner. So the Anshe Yavan were defiling, they were, you know, I'll use a modern word, but they were contaminating the stones of the Mizbeach. So the house of the Chashmonai took those stones and basically put in Geniza in the northeast corner of the Beis HaMokad. Meaning, what did the Yavanim do? They took it and they used the stones for Avodah Zarah. Now, Amra Papa Hasam Kra Ashkach V'Darsh, Dichsiv. So the Gemara says, okay, that's true, but truth be told is that that was based on the Pasuk. Pasuk in Yecheskel. Now, obviously, Yecheskel predated the Chashmonaim by many years, but the idea that is expressed in Yecheskel is now going to be applied by the Chashmonaim. Uvaba pritzim v'chiluhu. Along comes the pritzim, and what did they do? They were mechalal. They defiled it. So, Amri Echinavid. Now the Chashmonaim said, look, along comes the pritzim, and they defiled it. I'll be more specific about that in just a moment. But in other words, the Chashmonaim now said, what are we going to do with these stones? Nitbarinu. So what are we going to do now? We're going to break the stones? The Gemara says, we can't do that. Avanim Shlemos HaMarachmana. So the Torah says that when you're making a Mizbech, you have to make it out of full stones, not broken pieces. Ninsarinu, well, why don't we just shave it down? Lo Sanin Falein Barzel. HaMarachmana. Well, we can't because you're not allowed to use metal instruments in the formation of the Mizbech. Ve'amai litbarinu v'lishkalin l'avshayu. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. I understand that you're not going to be able to use it again for the Mizbech. But why not break it and use it for themselves? Milo Amar Avoshia Bichu Lingno is called Kesav Vazav Shiba Olam, Mishim Kaspa Vazav Vishol Shulayim. So Rav Oshia says that, you know, silver and the gold in the world, they wanted to be gones because it may have been used in the Beit HaMikdash. Ve'havinan ba. And the Gemara says, and on that we ask the following question. Yerushalayim Havia Ruba de Amma? I don't understand. Gold and silver Yerushalayim gets mixed and intermingled with all the gold and silver in the world, but it doesn't represent a majority. It is but a small minority. Elam Rabbi Bichulig knows dinar. I'm sorry, dinari hedrina terina shipa mibnei tava shel Yerushalayim. No, what they were looking to do was they were looking to hide the silver and gold, meaning the coins of Hadrian. We know that the vast majority of them belong to Hektesh, and so. Named after various Roman leaders, but in other words, they were Hektesh. Until we learn that you can have a parrot come and he can be mechalalit. So the Gemara says, so once we find this idea that a parrot can come and be mechalalit, so at that point in time, so it's okay. So here we are. Question. If the priestim can come and unconsecrate the coins that had a Kedusha on them. So why can't we say the same thing regarding the stones of the Mizbeach? Meaning, why can't we just simply view them as being unconsecrated? And what we'll do is we'll take them home and we'll break them. Why do they require Geniza? Ha sam lo ishtamshu buhu legavoa. Ha chakim di shamshu buhu legavoa lavarachar li shamushu buhu hejota. So the Gemara says, look, we'll make a distinction between coins and the stones of the Mizbeach. Coins were never used for Hektesh. They were dedicated for Hektesh, and then once the priestim come, so they unconsecrated, they removed the Kedusha, they were mechal of those coins, and because they were never actually used for temple service, so fine. But when we're talking about the stones of the Mizbeach, where they were actually used for temple service, so lav aruch ara, it's just simply inappropriate now that these stones be used by a Jotim. Even if you want to tell me that the Kedusha is gone, but still, they were once upon a time used for Avodas based on Mikdash, it's just simply inappropriate. The Gemara described it earlier as Machshire Avoda. That's an expression that we saw earlier in the Gemara. Okay, a necessary component of the Beis HaMikdash, of doing the Avoda. Now, a number of times already we described how the Pritzim came and they were Mechala. And so the question you have to ask is, well, what was the process? Meaning, so you have the, I will right now describe them as the Greeks, right? Okay, historically, Greeks, Syrians, okay, right, but in other words, for our purposes right now, as we're learning Masechta Avodah Zarah, let's call them non-Jews. So non-Jews come and they profaned the stones of the Mizbeach. From a process standpoint, how does that work? So let's quote a Rashi that is often quoted on this topic, and right here on our daf, Rashi can be found in the last narrow line of the Amud, and now we're on the first wide line of the Amud. So now Rashi describes that non-Jews are coming into the Heichal, Yatsu Kela the Chulin. So now at that point in time, the Kelim are going to Chulin. The Kelim to Nafkalo Chulin, Kaneninu Behefkera. So the way Rashi explains the process, it goes like this. In other words, it goes from being Hektish to Chulin. Meaning once they enter into the courtyard, so it now downgrades from once upon a time belonged to Hektish to now that of being Chulin. And they're Konan, meaning at that point in time, now they can make a Kinyan. Vahavaluhu didhu. So now it belongs to them. Ukishin ishtam shubam lavodas kochavim nasru. And now that they're using it for Avodah Zarah, now it becomes Asar. Okay, so it's even with the Rashi, you know, I'm still limited in the way I can present this and explain this, but somehow as they go into the Beis HaMikdash, so stones that were once upon a time used as part and parcel of the Mizbeach now go from a point of Hekdesh to a point of Chulin. How does that happen? Yeah. I don't know. Meaning,
doing anything just by walking?
I'd like to try to be clear about this process. That step to go from Hekdesh to Chulin, I'm not sure. In other words, maybe conquering. Maybe that's the idea. I'm not sure. But again, I know this Rashi is quoted often in this discussion. That step, I'm not sure about. But then once they acquire it, so now it's theirs. And now they are Ovid of Avodah Zarah using these stones. So that's how it becomes now a Cheftza shel Avodah Zarah. That part I get. Okay. And by the way, you also understand why Rashi has to say that. Because if they didn't go from Hekdesh to Chulin, so now what? They could do whatever they want to it. It's not theirs. And we know the principle is, Ein Adam Oser Davar Sheino Shelo. Meaning, if it doesn't belong to them, so whatever they do to it, they can't change the status of it. They can certainly not make it into a Chefzer Shel Avodah Zarah if it's not theirs, if it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's why I know why Rashi is saying that it goes from Hekdesh to Chulin. Otherwise, they couldn't turn it into an Avodah Zarah, a Chefzer Shel Avodah Zarah. But after that, though, how does it go from Hekdesh to Chulin? You know, I'm struggling a little bit, obviously. But anyway, but that's how Rashi describes it. Okay. Let's continue now in the Mishnah. Okay. We're in the Mishnah on Nunbeis Amud Beis. Ovi Kochavim, Mevato Avodas Kochavim Shelo V'Shel Chavero. I know it's an idea that we've already spoken about many times, but this is the Mishnah. The Mishnah here that teaches us that, how is Avodah Zarah actually Mevutal? How does it become negated? So it can only be done by a non-Jew. But, as we've discussed earlier, and we told the story earlier, it can be done by a non-Jew not only on his own Avodah Zarah, but it can even be done on somebody else's Avodah Zarah as well. But somebody else's meaning another non-Jew's Avodah Zarah. However, Yisrael, but once the Avodah Zarah is owned by a Jew, Ein Mevato Avodas Kochavim Shel Ovi Kochavim. A Jew cannot be Mevato, certainly not his own Avodah Zarah that he owns, nor can a Jew be Mevato the Avodah Zarah of a non-Jew as well. So here the Mishnah just simply lays out the ground rules of who can do Bittul, and like we said since the beginning of the Masechta, but this is now, or I should say rather, since the beginning of the third Perek, but this is the Mishnah that clearly articulates this point. Only a non-Jew can do Bittul Avodah Zarah, a Jew cannot do Bittul Avodah Zarah. HaMevato Avodas Kochavim Mevato Meshamshea, Bittul Meshamshea, Meshamshea Mutarim V'hi Asura. Now, let's say you have an Avodah Zarah, and let's say you have its accessories, meaning, like we discussed earlier, Tashmishi Avodah Zarah. Once it goes Mevato the Avodah Zarah, the Tashmishim come along for the ride. They're also Mevutal, and it makes perfect sense, meaning the whole point of Tashmishim is that they are accessorizing this Avodah Zarah. So once the Avodah Zarah becomes Bato, the accessories become Bato as well. Let's do it the other way. Let's say a goy is Mevato the Tashmishi Avodah Zarah, which he can. As we learned earlier, you cannot be Mevato Takrovis Avodah Zarah, but that's an offering to the Avodah Zarah. Here we're talking about Tashmishi Avodah Zarah, anything used to accessorize the Avodah Zarah. So let's say a goy is Mevato Tashmishi Avodah Zarah, which he has the right to do, but only the Tashmishim become Mevutal, but not the Avodah Zarah itself. Meaning if he doesn't clearly articulate. Continuing in the Gemara. Masile Rebbe LeRebbe Shimon. Now we have the word Rebbe, but probably Berei. Right? Rebbe now is teaching the Bryce, or I should say better, the Mishnah, meaning Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, teaches over the following Mishnah to his son. Ovi Kocham Mevato Avodas Kocham Shelo V'Shel Chavero. Okay, what we learned in our Mishnah. And now, Amalei Rebbe Shanita Lanabi Al Dutzech Ovi Kocham Mevato Avodas Kocham Shelo V'Shel Yisrael. V'Shel Yisrael. So, you taught us once upon a time, this is now Rebbe's son saying to his father, you taught us at one point in time that a goy can be mevato his avodah zarah and that of a Jew. And I don't understand. Yisrael mikam mevatla. Vaha visham b'seser ksiv. We learned earlier that once the avodah zarah is owned by a Jew, so the only thing you could do with it is geniza. Meaning it is not subject to bittul. So Amrav Hillel Bered the Rebbe Wallace Lanitzrcha Sheish Laba Shitfus. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about the following scenario. We're talking about a case where the Avodah Zarah is now owned in partnership, where 50 doesn't have to be 50%, but 50% is owned by a Jew, 50% of owned is owned by a non-Jew. And Biyal Dusam Kasavra. Now Rebbe in his earlier a form of being a Talmid Chacham in his younger years, so he thought like this. And what did he think as he got older? Look, here we have an unusual circumstance where you have an idol that's owned in joint partnership between Jew and non-Jew. And the Jew's bowing down. Rebbe thinks to himself, as he's a younger Talmid Chacham, yeah, you know, the Jew's bowing down to the Avodah Zarah, but in other words, he's got his partner right alongside him. You know, his partner in his religious fervor is bowing down to the Avodah Zarah. The Jew's looking over, look, you know, I when in Rome, you know, he's my partner, he's my friend, he's bowing down to it. Okay, so I'll bow down to it as well, but I don't really believe in it. And so therefore, from the Jew standpoint, so even though he has an ownership, he has a share in it, and even though he's bowing down to it, but he's not, with no real feeling, no real meaning. And then, as Rebbe gets older, he realizes, no, that when the Jews bowing down to it, he really is believing in it. And so now we have a scenario in which the non-Jew still has the ability to be mevatel, his share in the Avodah Zarah, but he cannot be mevatel, the share of the Jew, in this Avodah Zarah. Okay. And here we go now, round two of more or less the same discussion. A Jew cannot be mevata the Avodah Zarah of a non-Jew. Pshita. Now, isn't that obvious? Meaning, a Jew can't be mevata his own Avodah Zarah, and he cannot be mevata that of the Avodah Zarah of a non-Jew? That seems to be an obvious point. And Amarav Hilal Berei the Rebbe Wallace L'Nitzricha Sheish Lo Bashutfas. So again, now we're going to set up the same structure as we turn to the top of Nungimel Amud Aleph. We're talking now about a case where it is an Avodah Zarah owned in partnership with Jew and non-Jew. Now, even though the Jew cannot be mevatel, neither his share nor the non-Jew's share, but still, the point in the Chiddush is that the non-Jew can be mevatel his share of the Avodah Zarah. Here we go in round three, and again, more or less the same point. Rabbi Shimon Manasseh Omer Avodah Kocham Shei Yisrael, Ein La Betela Olamis. An idol owned by a Jew is never subject to bittul. My olam is amar avhilo berei the rabbi walas lo nitzruch ala sheyesh lo la ovik ocham bashurfas v'kamashman di yisrael adaita dinafshei palach. And again, basically the same point. We're talking about a case where it's an idol owned in partnership, and even though the Jew cannot be mevata the Avodah Zarah, and even though the non-Jew can be mevata his share in the Avodah Zarah, but the shares owned by the Jew in the Avodah Zarah are never subject to bittul.
I mean, it's an idol, it's a statue. So what is his share? Is it half of it? I mean, it's like... So how can he...
I
don't understand that.
When talking about shares, I mean, it's always, you know, always that discussion of how to view shares. In other words, that we have every...
It's not like, okay, this half is mine and this half is yours.
Right. I think the way we look at stocks is basically like a good way to look at shares of an item, meaning you can't actually pinpoint exactly what you own, but you own a percentage of it. We continue in the next Mishnah, Ketha Mevatla. Okay, what is the method of Bittel? Meaning, the previous Mishnah we talked about, who is Mevatel? The answer is a non-Jew, and only his own Avodah Zarah, another non-Jew's Avodah Zarah. And now we're talking about how. How are you Mevatel on Avodah Zarah? Again, I know we discussed this earlier, but this is the Mishnah. Mishnah discusses Ketha Mevatla, Kata Rosh, Azna. So you cut off, and I say you, meaning the non-Jew, is going to be cutting off a piece of the Avodah Zarah. Let's assume the Avodah Zarah is taking on the form of a human, so you cut off the ear, or Rosh, or even not even the ear, just a part of the ear. Rosh Azna, Rosh Chotma, or you cut off a piece of the nose. Rosh Etzba'a, or you cut off a piece of the finger. Pachsa Afa Pishlo Chisra Bitla. Now, if you take a hammer and you knock it with a hammer, you're Mevatel it. The Gemara is going to ask the question, but you didn't knock anything off of it. So stay tuned as we get to the Gemara. The Gemara is going to discuss. Now, all these are going to be acts of bittul. However, rak b'fana yishim b'faneha. Let's say the non-Jew were to spit at the Avodah Zarah or urinate on the Avodah Zarah. Girara, or let's say drag it through the mud. Zarek bas tzora, or throw a piece of excrement on to the Avodah Zarah. Re'ze'ena b'tela. So this does not create bittul. What this is just we're in a fight right now. Me and the Avodah Zarah, right, we're unhappy with one another right now, but okay. But in other words, tomorrow we're going to be back and better than ever. Okay. Machra umashkana. Now, let's say the non-Jew were to sell the Avodah Zarah. Now, is that considered bittul? Is that repudiation? Now, here you can see both sides of the argument. On one hand, if he really believes it's his God and it's his deity, he's not selling it to anybody. Meaning, you know, it's his, you know, it's if he believes it's a power, it's a source of his power. And so if he sells it to somebody, isn't that kind of a repudiation? On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe selling it to another non-Jew is basically, look, I believe it's powerful, I believe it's a God, but I also believe in money. Right?
To sell it to a non-Jew, he takes it for granted that the non-Jew is going to...
Oh, okay, good. All right, so right now you could see a difference in terms of who is he selling it to. Good. Happens to be the Gemara is going to have that discussion, so stay tuned. How is the answer? Machra or Mashkan? So if it's either sold or Mashkan, meaning let's say the non-Jew needs money. And so now what does he do? So he hocks his Avodah Zarah, right? Puts it up as collateral against the loan so that he can borrow money. So again, if he really believes it's a power, it's a deity, it's not exactly a way that you would treat it. So Rabbi Omer Bittul. So Rabbi says, these are acts of Bittul. And the Chachamim Omerim lo Bittul. And the Chachamim said, no, they're not. Meaning you have to go back to what we discussed in the beginning of the Mishnah. You have to break it. But just because you sold it, or even if you used it as collateral for a loan, these are not acts of bittul according to the Chachamim. Okay.
Didn't we say also you can just say renounce it?
Right. A verbal renouncement seems to be insufficient. Agreed.
It is insufficient?
Yeah, but this is more than just a verbal renouncement, though. You're selling it.
If you renounce it...
In other words, you have to do. You have to, in other words, there has to be a. From our Mishnah, it's very clear there has to be a Maisa. You have to remind me about which Gemara. Kilochis or Bamai Bitla. So the Gemara says now. The Gemara is asking about hitting it with a hammer. Hitting with a hammer, okay, but. In other words, from the beginning of the Mishnah, it seems very clear. There has to be a physical deformity occurring with your action in order for there to be Bitla. So you hit it with a hammer, okay, you hit it with a hammer. So I'm Reb Zera shepascha bifaneha. So what you did when hitting it with a hammer is you actually dented it. So denting it is considered a physical change within the idol, and that is considered bittul. Now, rak bifaneha vishim bifaneha manani mili. Now, just spinning on it or urinating on it is not bittul. Teaches us the Mishnah. So how do we see this? Amar chizki amar krav ayaki ir avis katzev v'kalav b'mako uvelohav ufana lemala. So in the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu, so the Navi describes how what they did is they got angry with their Avodah Zarah. And they turned upwards to Hashamayim. And then move on in Sefer Yeshayahu, go to Perches, and you're going to find that he's reunited with his Avodah Zarah. So just because you're angry with your Avodah Zarah, that doesn't mean that you've given up on it. It just means that currently you're angry with your Avodah Zarah. But you can go back with it. So that's why spitting on it, urinating on it is insufficient. And the Gemara just simply, look at the arc over here. You start off by being angry on it, cursing your Avodah Zarah, but then, eight prakim later, they're back together again. And so here now, What you suggested earlier is going to make, it's going to be important to know who he sold it to. Who did the non-Jew sell his idol to? So over here now, the Gemara is going to bring down Amorayim, who are going to be debating this issue. Meaning, what they're going to do is now they're going to limit the machlokus of the Mishnah. Machlokus b'sarfa v'kochavim. Look, you sold it to who? You sold it to the non-Jewish junkyard or to the Jewish junkyard? The debate, according to one opinion, is that only when you sell it to the non-Jewish junkyard. But if the non-Jew is taking his idol and selling it to the Jewish junkyard, so you know what the non-Jew is going to do with it. The non-Jewish smith, what he's going to do with it is he's going to strip it down for parts. Meaning, right? He's not going to resell it as an idol, or again, presumably not. And why that's important is because we have to look at it from the standpoint of the seller. Meaning, the seller over here is a non-Jew selling his avodah zarah. So again, look at who he's selling it to. If he's selling it to let's start with a Jew. If he's selling it to a Jewish blacksmith, clearly he knows what's going to happen to it, or at least we expect that he knows what's going to happen to it. The Jewish smith is going to be selling it for parts, and so that is an act of bittul. Masha Enkin, if he's selling it to another non-Jewish smith, maybe not. maybe the non-Jewish smith will resell it as a idol. And so there is the machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Chan Amar and the other one says no. In fact, just the opposite. Well, maybe just the opposite. Okay. Bitzar if you saw machlokus. Even when selling it to a Jewish smith, maybe that's not an act of bittul, and maybe there's a machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim, where Rebbe says that that's an act of bittul, and the Chachamim say that's not an act of bittul. Now, in the second opinion, what is clearly articulated is that there's a machlokus in the case where you sold it to a Jewish smith. What does this opinion say regarding selling it to a non-Jewish smith? One opinion, of course, is that one way to look at it is that if you sold it to a non-Jewish smith, so that's clearly not an act of bittul, as you expected now to basically turn around and sell the idol as an idol. So maybe no. Maybe they're arguing in both cases. So Tashma. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. Amar Rebbe, where we have now the following brisa, where Rebbe is now reconsidering the position. And he says like this, Nirin divrei kishamachra lechavla, v'divrei chavra shamachra leovda. Well, it should matter whether or not I'm selling it to a chovel versus I'm selling it to an oved. Now, chovel and oved are verbs, meaning someone who destroys, someone who serves. Who's destroying and who's serving? So my lechavla, my loavda, ilim lechavla, lechavla, mamish loavda, loavda, mamish, my tamad, mandam, rebito, my tamad, mandam, lobito. Gemara says, look, if you're going to a junkyard and you know for sure that he is junking your idol, so clearly that's an act of bito. There's no other way to look at it. And if you're selling it to someone who's going to serve it, so that's clearly not an act of bito. So elalav lechavla, lemisha asid lechavla, umanit sarif yisrael, laovda, lemisha asid laovda, umanit sarif ovei kochavim. So over here, chovel and oved must be not descriptions of what they're going to do to it, but rather who they are, meaning people. Meaning, presumably what it means is selling it to a Jew versus selling it to a non-Jew. Selling it to a Jew is called a chovel because most probably he's going to scrap it. Selling it to a non-Jew is called an oved because most probably he'll just simply turn around. Either he himself will serve it, or he'll turn around and sell it to someone who's going to serve it. Now, what Rebbe's basically, what he's contemplating is, I think I'm right when selling it to a Jew. I think the Chachamim are right when selling it to a non-Jew. Which means that what's their fundamental position? The fundamental position of Rebbe is, there's always bittul. The fundamental position of the Chachamim is, there's always never bittul. That seems to be the way it's presented. And shma mina bein bazeh machlokes. And that means to say that they're debating fundamentally. And the Gemara says not necessarily low. Hachi kamar. In fact, maybe when we're reading Rebbe's thoughts, this is what really he meant. I'm a Rebbe nirin divrei lechaverai, meaning I am in agreement with the Chachamim kishamachol lechavla umanu sarf yisrael. That when selling it to a Jew, when selling it to a Jew, we actually agree. Because they don't disagree with me in that scenario. They only disagree with me when selling it to a non-Jew. But when selling it to a chovel, meaning a Jew, who most probably is going to end up scrapping it, so then they agree to me that in fact is an act of bittul. That's how we can understand Rebbe. So not that they are fundamentally disagreeing. No. When selling it to a Jew, when a non-Jew sells his idol to a Jew, what Rebbe meant is that the Chachamim agree with me. And the only point of disagreement is when selling it to a non-Jew. Okay. Meitzvei. The Gemara over here quotes the following brisa lekech grutaus menov dikochavim. Let's say you go to a junkyard and you're buying pieces of silver from a non-Jew. Umatabem avodas kochavim. And as you're now collecting your silver, so you're now looking, what you thought you bought were pieces of silver, and meanwhile, there's an idol. Didn't see that happening. If, let's say, before you paid the man his money, so you just did a mashicha, and now you see, oh no, there's an idol over here, so you just simply hand it back. Now, if you already paid for it, so then you take it to Yam HaMelech. Now, even though this is clearly a case of Mekach Tos, meaning you certainly weren't interested in buying an idol. You were only interested in buying scraps of pieces of silver. Even though it's true that it's a Mekach Tos, but you did a Mashicha and you paid money at this point in time, from a Maris Ayin standpoint, it looks like you bought it. I know you didn't actually buy it. It is clearly a Mekach Tos, but still, the appearance is that you look like you bought it, so therefore, maybe we can call it a Kanas, it's a Gzera, however you wanna phrase it, but at that point in time, you take its value, throw it to the Yam HaMelech. I mean, you can't get any benefit from that.
The first case that you didn't pay for it, why did you need to turn it back?
Because you didn't pay for it, you just did Mashicha. It is an acquisition when buying from another Jew. When buying from a non-Jew, however, ma'us konos, the money creates the acquisition. I know, but you didn't pay for it yet. When talking about commercial activity between Jew and non-Jew, so money is the operating method of Kenyan.
Is that considered putting...
Right, in other words, well, again, you didn't buy it. It happens to be. You took it, but as in a total error.
Let me ask you: can you steal idols and destroy them?
Can you? No. In other words, you don't have the ability to. You, the Jew, do not have the ability to be mevatel it. That's a starting.
No, steal that doing
yam. I mean. Okay, in other words, it's okay, it's an interesting question. Anyway, let's stay here with the Gemara on point. So, here we have a scenario in which you're now taking pieces of silver, and then what ends up is that there's an idol over there within that silver, so under certain circumstances, you have to return it to him. You just simply return it to him saying it was an error, it's Mekachtos, under certain circumstances, you take it and you throw it to the Yam HaMelech. Now, but the Gemara says, well, let's think this through. So the Gemara says, well, who did you buy the silver from? Did you buy it from a Jew? Now, if you bought it from a Jew, so the Gemara says, so then that's fine. Meaning, I now know why, meaning the idol you just bought, why does it have status as an idol? Meaning the Jew bought it from a non-Jew. Let's assume. So when the Jew bought it from the non-Jew, so according to Rabbi, that represents Bittul.
Right.
But according to the Chachamim, that does not represent Bittul. Okay, good. So then I understand why it would be required for the Jew to take the idol that even though he erroneously purchased, but there was Mashiach and there was Maus that was exchanged, so therefore he has to send it to Yam HaMelech. Ela'i Amar B'tzarif Ovi Kochavim Machlokas Aval B'tzarif Yisrael Divrei Alkol Bittul. But if you take the position that anytime a non-Jew takes his idol and sells it to a Jew, and you want to tell me now that according to everybody, according to both Chachamim and according to Rebbe, that represents Bittul, so then there's no need to take the idol and throw it to the Yam HaMelech. Meaning once this idol gets into the hands of the Jewish junkyard, it by definition now is Bittul. So Hamani. So the Gemara says no. Shani Asam Da Adaita De Gurtao Zavin Adaita Dava Kochavim Lo Zavin. So the Gemara says, look, clearly there was an error. Meaning, what was being sold over here was silver, pieces of silver. Meaning, even on that first transaction, when the non-Jew went over to the junkyard selling his pieces of silver, he himself didn't realize that there was an idol over there. Yeah. You know when there's Bittul when he is looking at the idol saying, you know what, I clearly don't care about you anymore, I'm going to sell you to a Jewish junkyard. So then, basically, he's giving up hope on the idol, and that's an act of Bittul. But when he's selling it, he's unaware that the idol's part of the silver. So then there's in fact no Bittul. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Gemara now in the very bottom of the Amud. Two lines from the bottom. Lava Allah, Oshanafu Allah, Mapolos. Oshaganvu Alistim, Oshinichu Abalim, Vahachlim Bedina Sayah. Let's say the Brisa here goes through a series of things that you think would be Bittul, but there's no real act of Bittul. So let's say, Lava Allah, he borrowed against the idol. Okay, so basically, here, you know what? You want a security for this loan? You see that idol over there? That'll serve as security. Or Nafla Allah Mapolos, or let's say rubble falls on the idol. But again, he didn't do anything. Oh, Shaganvu list him. Or let's say the idol was stolen from him. Broke into his house and the idol was stolen from him. But again, he himself didn't do anything. Oh, Shinichu Abalim V'Achulam Dina Sayam. Or let's say he leaves town, leaving his idol over here. But once again, he didn't do anything. In every one of these actions, nothing was done. Im, turn top of Nun Gimel Amud Beis. Im asidim lachzer kemachemes Yehoshua, eina betela. So the if there was an intent on returning, just like the war of Yehoshua, we'll be clear about that in just a moment. So, but in all these cases, eina betela, there's no bittul. There's no bittul, because again, for bittul, there has to be an action of bittul in all these cases. He neglected his avodah zarah, but avodah zarah neglect is not bittul. You have to do something positively adversive to the avodah zarah in order for it to be bittul. Utsricha, the Gemara says, now all these cases are necessary because let's consider. So over here, look, he borrowed against the avodah zarah, but in other words, he didn't sell it. He just simply used it as a security. He leveraged it.
Isn't that sort of like mezalzel?
Yeah, agree.
But in the negative, that it's like an idol that's broken, you assume that they were dented. You assume that it's like also like.
No, in other words, you leveraged it for a loan.
No, but isn't that symbolic of like a?
It's symbolic, but symbolism is not enough. In other words, you have to do an action. But if, let's say, now rubble falls on his avodah zarah, right? And now he's not looking for it, like that's even greater neglect, right? And that should be bittul. The itan nafalala maplos mishum de savala hamanchas kol emas de biinala shakinala. And look, if let's say you have rubble falling on it, so look, you can imagine him saying to himself, at least it's in a safe place, right? I know where it is, and you know when the time comes and I need it, I know where to get it. But let's say it's stolen from him. Where there, he's not bothering finding it anymore. So isn't that should for sure be an act of bittul, right? And sricha. And so therefore that case also is necessary. And if it's stolen from him, but still, let's think about how he's viewing it. On one hand, if the person who stole from me is a non-Jew, good, at least he gets to worship it now. And he saw Shakla, I did the Dama Yikarim, Mazman Leila Ove Kochavim Palachla. And if it was a Jew who stole it, so good for him. In other words, they'll turn around and they'll make some money on it. Wonderful. But if he moves away and he leaves the Avodah Zarah here, so isn't that a clear act of neglect and negation? Like, I'm not taking the Avodah Zarah with me. So im asim lachzer kemachamis Yehoshua ina betela. So the Gemara says that's exactly the point. In other words, in his mind, somewhere in his mind, he has a plan of returning. He has some idea of returning, and as a result of that, so it's not bittul. So again, all these are all examples of neglect, clear neglect of the avodah zarah, and the point, of course, is exactly that. It's only neglect. It's not a positive act of bittul, and therefore that's not bittul. Now the Gemara says, now let's think about this. We described. Just like they were considering of returning when they went to war against Yehoshua. Now Rashi over here points out that we're talking about when the Amorim went to war against Yehoshua, they left their houses, they left their avodah zarah and the houses, and they planned on returning. Now you know, they never returned, meaning they lost the battle to Yehoshua. Hachi kamar. The Gemara says, well, that actually is exactly the point. So, in other words, somewhere in their mind, they had it in their head that they were going to come back. They didn't come back. That's not the point. The point is that they were thinking about coming back, and that means that it's not bittul avodah zarah. And the Gemara says, and as just another, as like a bonus point, here's what we can learn. Look, here's a point that we made earlier in the Masechta. We're going to make it again. Let's say a Jew takes a brick, turns the brick on its narrow side. So now the brick is standing tall, and along comes a non-Jew and worships it. That is now considered that the brick is a chefzer shel avodah zarah. Now who worshipped it, the Jew or the non-Jew?
None.
Well, the non-Jew worshipped it, but it was set up by the Jew.
Was it
also? It's okay, good. So minalan de asra. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. How does it become asr? Amar avalaza kitzchila shel eretz yisrael. The Amar Rachmana. So the Gemara says, I'll give you a great way to understand how this works. Let's go back to the history of Israel. The Ashrem Tisrufum Be'esh. So look, what happened? The land was given to our Avos. And then the Avos took a short trip down to Egypt. And by short, I mean 200 plus years. Okay. But in other words, but during those 200 plus years, land is ours. In other words, it was a Yerusha given to Avram Avinu, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov. And then what we did is, we left it just for a short 200 plus years. It's interesting. The Gemara, look, listen to the Gemara over here. The Gemara here is going to talk about the Avos having an acquisition. Now, Michti Yerusha Hilahem Avoseim Ve'in Adam Oser Davishena Shalom. So now the Gemara has such a wonderful question, a fantastic question, and the answer, by the way, if you don't know the Gemara's answer, it's rather amazing. So here now, so during this short 2 century. Absence of Israel. So you had a bunch of Canaanite people who occupied Israel, and they, but in other words, they plant the tree as an Asherah. It's not their land, not their tree. How do they become Asherah trees? So the Gemara says, well, maybe it was the trees that were planted before Avram Avinu. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, but simple bittul, meaning, you ask them, or you don't even have to ask them. Force them to be mevatel, and shouldn't that be enough? So here comes the answer now, really an unbelievable answer. And that is that, look, we bowed down to the eagle in right as we come out of Egypt. Well, not right after, but pretty sure thereafter. And galu adatayu de nichlu ba'avodas kochavim. And so basically, what is that? That is an affirmation that we are accepting Avodah Zarah. And now when the Ovei Kochavim, at the same time, concurrently, in Israel, are bowing down, not to their Asherah, it's our Asherah. It was our land. Meaning the Avos were given the land. But now as they're bowing down to our Asherah, so Shlichusa Didhu Avdei, they're serving as our agents in terms of bowing down to the trees. Ha chinami Yisrael shezakaf levena galya daita denichale b'avodas kochavim v'chiyasa ovei kochavim upalachla shlichusa didei ka'avin. So the Gemara says, and they're working as our agents. To which the Gemara says, v'dilma be'egohu denichalu b'midach minalo. The Gemara says, well, you're making a really huge assumption. And that is that when we worship the eagle, not only were we interested in idolatry towards the eagle, but we were endorsing, and now more than endorsing, actually asking the non-Jewish people who were living in Israel, who were, you know, serving our trees, because they were our, they belonged to ours, our trees, to be acting as our emissaries and serving as our agents in terms of Avodah Zarah. How do you know that we were interested in all the various Avodah Zarahs? Amakra, Eila, Elohecha Yisrael. Go back to last week's Parsha. It says Eila. Eila means these. These are Elokecha, not Elokecha. These are Elohecha Yisrael. These are your gods. In the plural. Malamich evil Elohos Harbe. Ema called the Bahadi Egel Nisru Mikan Ve'elech Nishtaru. So the Gemara says, okay, let's even assume that this is true. So the Gemara says, so, at the point of concurrence, meaning while we were serving the Egel, so everything that was being served at the same time in Eretz Yisrael also is going to be considered a chesed shel avodah zarah, and they're doing it as our agent. Aye, but what about afterwards? And then, look, and we don't get into Eretz Yisrael until 40 years later. So anything that serves subsequently is not a chesed shel avodah zarah. So the Gemara ends off, interestingly, with the words man muchach. Okay, but how do we know which one's which? The last Rashi, mi yodea eze haisa be'osa shah, ve'eza navda achare kein. Really, really interesting in terms of how it is that the trees in Eretz Yisrael become an Asherah tree. And the Gemara's answer over here, really interesting. Gemara's answer over here is that basically it's done through an act of shlichus, an act of agency.
But you can see which ones are old trees and new trees. Because the old trees are the old ones that are worshipped. The new ones, okay, I can understand.
It just is an interesting aside, by the way, like... I, the Gemara doesn't ask this question. I'm sure I didn't see this yet. I didn't research it thoroughly enough. But we know that Inshlech Lidvar Avera, meaning you were thinking that as well. Yeah. Okay.
Can you make it
right?
So it's not an Avera.
Yep. Okay.
Can you make it go?
If I see something, I'll share.
A good point.
Okay. You can make it go here.
Right.